I read this gospel, and I think of when I was just a teen, maybe it was when I was named a teenager, I was about 12, 13, maybe 14 years old, I don't know, I was a stupid kid, and I really was very good at being stupid. That was one of my specialties. I remember sitting in the car, and my mom got out for something. She had to go back and do something else, and left the engine running, and it was a standard transmission car, and if you've ever had a stick shift, you know that in order to leave the engine running and run out and go do something, the emergency brake is on and the car's in neutral. Makes sense to anyone who's driven the car. And I don't know why, but I took it upon myself in my mind, and I'm looking at the car, and I'm thinking to myself that something's wrong. There wasn't anything wrong, by the way, in case anyone was curious. I was, in fact, just a stupid kid. But in my mind, there was something wrong. Something wasn't right. And I'm looking at this. My mother goes into the house, and she got something. She came back out. I'm a teenager. I can sit in the car for 10 seconds by myself in theory, right? Apparently not. My mother paused outside the car, and she was talking to someone in the house. And I grabbed the shifter, and I put it in reverse. Which, if you've ever done that, killed the car immediately. The car died, right then and there. I threw it in reverse, the car died. Has no gas, it didn't happen. And my mother stopped because she noticed that the car died immediately. And she turned and she opened the door and she looked at me and she said, "Don't ever do that again." And I could take that and say, well, what she meant was, don't ever do something with well intentions again. Because in my mind, I was well intentioned. I was trying to make sure that everything was okay. I wanted to make sure that things were going well. But what she meant was, don't be stupid and, you know, throw the car in reverse when the car is idling and it's not supposed to. It's what we hear as opposed to what it is. I'll give you another example. One of my very good friends and classmates, when I was in college seminary from the Diocese of Lincoln, had a little piece of paper on the inside of his door so that every time he went out into the school, he saw this little piece of paper. It was at about eye level. And so every time he grabbed the doorknob and he headed out, he saw this little piece of paper and it said, "Don't be stupid." And it almost seems mean if you think about it, you know, that you would have this kind of reminder. He put it there himself. It's not someone else put it there, but he put it there himself. And if you took that by itself, you might think that he actually thought very little of himself, or he struggled with self-esteem, or he might be kind of a dour person. But actually, he was actually quite a joyful person. He was actually very, very good. And if I only told you that story about my mother, you might think that my mother was just focused on obeying rules and following after those rules. And it doesn't tell the full story. It's incomplete as to what's going on. What's my point? Well, let's look at this gospel for a second. Genuinely consider it. These great crowds are traveling with Jesus, and what does he say? He says, if anyone comes to me without hating father and mother and wife and children and brothers and even his own life, cannot be my disciple. And people read it and they think, wow, that's not the loving Jesus I know. My answer always has to be, take it with the full story. No one said that we're supposed to take this line out of the gospel and say that this is Jesus and there is no other part of the gospel and this is the only thing that we go on and it's the only thing that we build on. It's quite the opposite. This is a piece of a larger gospel. Now, that in mind, and bear in mind that there is that loving Jesus and we have so many other excellent points in the gospel and other parts that we want to remember, that doesn't mean we should discount this either. We shouldn't write this off or lose sight of it or lose track of it. It is, in fact, something important. Somewhere along the way, we as a nation began to become very focused on this idea that as long as we were just really good, that everything would be okay. And the answer that I kind of have to laugh at is, if we're just really good, that doesn't necessarily assume that everything's going to be okay. If we're really good, then we'll follow after all things we're supposed to, and we'll build in the kingdom of heaven, and we can hope for heaven ourselves one day. But that doesn't guarantee that everything's going to be okay. It's not an immediate, clean slate. I'm good, therefore bad things don't happen to me. We might confuse that. And even people who say they don't confuse that, they're the same people who say, I'm in this rut, I'm having these hard things, why is God mad at me? I'm a good person. And you have to pause and think about it for a second, because then we've just assumed that if I do good things, then everything's going to be okay, that I won't get cancer, or people in my family won't suffer, or there won't be any struggling, or there won't be any of these things. And it's quite the opposite. It doesn't say that. And it doesn't just apply to tragedies. It doesn't just apply to early deaths or unfortunate disease or those other frustrations. There's always strife. And some of that strife is in our very families. Some of that struggle is in our family. We have fights. We have disagreements. We have shouting matches. Sometimes we're passive aggressive and we don't shout at all, but we have just as much virulence as anyone else. I know for a fact that my grandfather died refusing to apologize to his brother about a family reunion event that had happened so long prior, that it happened before my grandfather got cancer, and he never bothered to tell his brother that he got cancer because he was still mad at him at some fight that they had had at a family reunion event. These things happen. I know they do. It happened in my family. I assume I'm not the only one. But there's something to this gospel. What does it say? It says, if anyone who comes to me without hating father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, or even his own life cannot be my disciple. What is that? Well, I think there's something very important here that my generation seems to have lost. And maybe it's not all of my generation, maybe it's just some of my generation, but the sum of my generation who gets interviewed most often and they post the results, they say, what's most important in your life? And they say, well, family and friends are most important in my life. Usually friends, then family. And somewhere around second, third, or fourth is gone. My generation has completely missed the target. Because God has to come first. God completely has to come first. No matter the tragedy, no matter the loss, no matter the frustration, no matter the pain, no matter the whatever, God must come first. If we find ourselves frustrated, we find ourselves struggling, so oftentimes people come and they say, well, you know, I'm trying to help my family and it's really hard at home right now, and you know, it's just there's a money issue, or there's a struggle, or there's this, or there's that, or there's disease, and we're really struggling with that, and I'm frustrated at work, and my coworkers are driving me crazy, and I'm frustrated at home because everything's just not working out at home, and the weather's driving me crazy, and this isn't working, and I haven't prayed at all. And I think to myself, well, there's your answer. Whatever happened to God? Genuinely, we have this challenge, we have this issue, and straight from Luke, it says, God has to be there. God has to come first. And I'll tell you what I've seen in the other direction. I got to sit with a Benedictine monk. A Benedictine monk who was in his 80s. He's dead now, but he was in his 80s. And I sat with him. I said, how's it going? He said, well, I don't like any of the new brothers. They drive me crazy. They're really annoying. They're just stupid. I said, well, they're young. They get to be stupid, don't they? He said, yes. Yes, they do. I said, how else are things going? He goes, I'm dying of cancer. It's awful. I'm in pain all the time. I said, how you doing? He said, I'm great. Because I know I'm loved by God. And I have my prayers. I talked to him longer. He had more things he could talk about. He had more things he could complain about. There was all kinds of frustrations. He didn't like the food. He felt ignored. He felt that people didn't even acknowledge when he gave good advice. He could go on forever about the things that are wrong with the world. But the first thing he started with, and genuinely meant it every time, he said, I'm good. Because I'm right with God. It's a great reminder to us that the bad things still happen. The frustrations are still there. There will always be struggle in our world. Just turn on the news. They'll tell you all about it. There's struggle in our world. But we got to have God first. We got to have God in front of everything else. St. Augustine, we celebrated his feast not too very long ago. And St. Augustine took a long time to come around to his faith. He was a boozer and a womanizer and kind of a ladies' man and played the field and did all kinds of things and had 13 illegitimate children and all kinds of other struggles in his life. He really had quite a wild life. Eventually he came to God, became the Bishop of Hippo, wrote great, great theology and incredible things and wrote mysteries on the Trinity that we're still trying to fully unravel and just an amazing, amazing person. He got to be at his mother's deathbed. And he's there, and his brother's there, and they're starting to cry, and they're really worried. I don't know why, it's St. Monica, I know. It wasn't St. Monica when she died. It had to take a while. But they really started to cry. It was this great, pain to them. She said, don't cry for me. She said, instead, remember me at the altar. It was that unity with God. It was that drive to be close to God in faith. It was that connection constantly that was willing to be close to God in that faith first. That really allowed this to happen. That really allowed her to come to this moment where she was ready to embrace that, whatever comes next. And I see this, and I'm reminded of this, and I love this dynamic of Augustine and his mother, of Augustine and Monica, because they too heard this passage. They too knew this gospel. And there were times where I'm sure it would have been much easier for Monica to say, you know what? I've tried, I've chased him for 20 plus years, I've encouraged him, I've cajoled him, I've prayed for him. If he's going to live that life, let him have it. Whoever does not give up mother and father, wife, children, brothers and sisters, and even their own life, they cannot be my disciple. But it's more than that. It's someone who's so willing to put God first, to put the priorities first that God wants in our lives, to strive constantly so that we might make those priorities for ourselves, that we have a life with God first, that all the other pieces flow out of. That we have that love for our spouse, that we have that love for our children, especially when they're being stupid. If you have a teenager, you know exactly what that's like. To have that love for your brother or your sister, no matter how much they drive us crazy, or aunts or uncles or grandparents or great-grandparents or any of the things in between. Somewhere along the line, we lost the way. We tried to place the love of our family and our friends first, and we tried to add in God later. It's like, oh yeah, I'll get to God later. And it's easy to place it off, isn't it? Because God isn't there regularly standing on our toes and driving us crazy and taking the last fork and dirtying dishes and not washing any of them and borrowing the car without asking and doing all these other things. You know, he's not there to drive us crazy in those ways. So, you know, God sort of gets that back seat, doesn't he? You know, we sort of put it off to the back, you know, so we'll get to prayer when later. Just before I go to bed, I'll make sure I say my prayers then. I'll get into it later. When really, genuinely, why isn't God first? Why doesn't God have that primacy, that first place in our life? That if we're genuinely trying to strive after God, and we want to follow after God's intentions, all of these things will come too. I never called my grandmother and told her I hated her because the gospel said I had to. But I did have to follow God's call first. And there are challenges along the way. I'm not going to deny that. There will always be challenges. My grandmother died at a really inconvenient time. I was in the middle of finals. I couldn't even make it home. I probably could have. But I called. I said, I don't know if I can make it. And they said, you know what? I don't think she's worried about it. Following after God as best I could. And I've been to visit my grandmother's site several times. I've prayed for her. I've remembered her masses. I've done many things. But I wasn't there at that funeral. Sometimes, when we truly follow after God, we do have to make sacrifices. And I'm not ever going to tell you that they're easy. But I tell you what, one day I too dream that I can be a surly, I can be just like that surly old monk who just can complain about anything as long as he starts with, I'm good. I'm right with God. I'm close to Him. If we're not willing to make that sacrifice, if we're not fully committed to do this, then what are we doing? Why are we spinning our wheels at all? We gotta be all in on this. Everything else that we do asks for 100% attention. Christianity is no less than that.